It's The Closers. Be part of the show now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Welcome back to The Closers here alongside Jay Sparks. I'm George Young, and Monday afternoon brings us the head coach of Missouri Tigers softball, head coach Aaron Earlywine. And, that was a weekend, coach. Man, you go out 1-0 on Friday night, and then Saturday they put three runs up on you in the top of the seventh. You lose that one. How much of Sunday was a hangover from Saturday?
I don't know. I'm more prone to think that after a tough loss like that, that you play a little bit more inspired, or should anyway. We started off really well, too, on Sunday. It felt like we were out of the gate trying to redeem ourselves and trying to get that loss from the previous day off our mind. Started off, had runners on second and third with nobody out in the first inning, the place was moving. It felt good. And then our 3, 4, 5 hitters came up and weren't able to get a single run in. And I think that, as much as anything, kind of caused us to slow the wheels down a little bit.
Now, you've got a midweek game coming up here, doubleheader against Western Illinois tomorrow night. Is there a lot of talk about the weekend, or is it just shut that down, put it in a box and up on the shelf and move forward?
Yeah, see, today's our off day, so the girls are just going to be recovering from the weekend, and then we'll all show up a couple hours before the game against Western Illinois and do a little preparation for them, and then play ball. So, for the most part, it's in the rearview mirror, and we'll have to shift our minds to, beating Western Illinois, and then Wednesday and Thursday we'll get a little practice time in before we play Auburn this coming weekend.
Head coach Aaron Earlywine with us here on The Closers. How much of a role is Scott Immortan playing this year, especially with the new and improved head coach, and also with this lineup that features two freshmen and three sophomores among some of the key contributors?
Yeah, Scott has been a big help in the past. This year, it's probably been less. Okay. We haven't had a lot of interaction with her this spring. I know she's busy with other sports and, running her department. I think the person that's kind of been really closer to our program this year than anybody has been Doc Holliday. He's worked with our girls and with our coaching staff on several different occasions, and is doing a great job. We enjoy our time with him. We haven't got to be with him a lot lately because of our schedules have just conflicted. But that's something that we definitely know is in our back pocket if we need it, and it's a big benefit, especially when you're coaching girls.
And that's a totally different thing than if I was talking to Coach Beezer and talking about the guys. You got to treat them just a little bit differently. With that, do you have to kind of self-check a little bit on where they are at mentally coming out of a tough weekend?
Yeah, you're always trying to keep your finger on the pulse and see where they're at, and that allows you to figure out the avenue by which you coach them. I think this past weekend was a setback, and there are two things we need to do as a coaching staff. Is one, learn from what we did wrong and try to fix that. And then two is encourage them and remind them that the most important part of the season is in May, and we're in mid-April. So finishing strong is a message we got to continue to preach. And then, of course, addressing the things that we didn't do well over the weekend. And outside of that, there's not much you can do.
Coach, with a younger team and the way the SEC softball game has evolved over the time, it seems like the idea of the scrappy softball, the long doubles, the base running, things like that being important. When it's a power game, is that harder for a younger team? When everything swings on one pitch, is that harder for a younger team to overcome in the middle of the game?
I hadn't considered that specific thought. I'm not sure. There are different types of teams in the SEC. You're right in that the majority of them can hit a home run anywhere in the lineup and cause immediate damage, and recovering from that can be tough for a young player, I guess. But then there are also teams in the SEC. Ole Miss is kind of one of those teams right now that Doesn't have a lot of power, but they have a lot of good singles and doubles types hitters and high on base percentage. And I tell you what, those runs can pile up that way pretty quick too. So I think either, whether it's a power team or a team that just stacks up a bunch of base runners and gets a lot of runs that way, I think either way, the maturity of a player is important after you have a big run inning and the ability to bounce back from that. So could be the case.
Coach, you're 37 games into this season, so we're on the back third of this thing. Has there been somebody that you've watched this season that has really pleasantly surprised you? And I want to take Shan Baxter out of that because we've talked about her a lot the last 2 weeks. So,
yeah. Let me think here for just a second about our lineup around the horn. I don't know if anybody has really surprised us. I mean, good heavens, we're with these girls so much, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, three hours a day of practice, and been doing it since early September, you know, of 2016. So there's not a lot of big surprises other than Cheyenne, really, which is what you mentioned. I mean, and I don't know if she's a surprise as much as just she's evolved and has more control than she used to have, which has allowed her to be good, but I don't think there's any one player that's really jumped out, you know, the big-time surprise for us.
Who's emerged as one or two of the leaders out there then? Because this has been a challenging year all the way around, not only up and down the lineup, but around the horn.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Riley Pierce, even though she's a sophomore, plays first base, and she's one of those real hard practicing kids, always doing the extra stuff, and just, you know, you get the feeling that she lives for this. And so that's contagious, and she's a good role model in that regard. And then, of course, senior catcher Kirsten Mack. Mm-hmm. You know, she has probably the best softball IQ, or as good a softball IQ as any player I've ever had. So she's able to bring that to the table, and she's pretty vocal in that regard. And then, of course, Amanda Sanchez, but her leadership abilities are hindered a little bit by the fact that she's injured. I mean, it's hard to lead when you're standing over there with a brace on your arm. So, you know, we've had the rug pulled out from under us a little bit this year in terms of leadership with her injury and the fact that we lost our three senior leaders last year that were so awesome for us with Crane, Gadboys, and Fagan. You know, and then we lost some players to, you know, personnel issues and kids that weren't good fits for our coaching staff. And so, you know, you put all those things together, and it has been a tough year, George. And I don't know, that for me, it's oddly enough been rewarding. And I know that just sounds crazy, but it's been rewarding because I have seen improvement with them. And from a coach's perspective, that's how you judge yourself, or at least that's how you should judge yourself. Is how much were you able to get out of the talent that you had, and were they better the last game of the season than they were the first game of the season? And hopefully, you know, if you do those things, we may surprise some people this year at the end of the season. We may not, but thus far I've, you know, in a weird way, I've enjoyed coaching these girls.
Coach Aaron Earlywine with us from Mizzou softball, and coach all season and even past couple seasons when we've had you on, you know, you talk about how much losing hurts, and there's never a good loss, and you know, how much it pains you as a person when that happens. With this team as a whole, as you talk about going down to the end of the season and whether or not you surprise people, is there a philosophical shift to an underdog mentality? Is that possible for Aaron Earlywine to embrace an underdog mentality, you know, with how much, you know, it does kind of personally pain you to take the L's?
I got to say, I do hurt just as bad as I always have after a loss. I mean, I'm not able to eat for hours and hours and hours after a loss. It just makes me sick. And I don't sleep well. You know, it's just none of that stuff will ever change with Aaron Earlywine. I think that's just the way God made me to be. But after the immediate, you know, just major sting of getting beat by somebody that you didn't feel like you should have got beat by, or that you didn't play up to your standards. After that sting is gone, I think I'm able to get perspective more now, and I think the reason I have some more perspective is because I almost lost my job last year. And now there's a gratefulness, a thankfulness to know that I'm secure and at the university that I want to be at. And so in that way, I've grown. And I think that's important that I have. Wearing that around with you 24/7, losing, wearing that around with you all the time, is fatiguing and it's not fun. It doesn't make coaching fun. It doesn't make my job fun. It doesn't make life fun. And so I think last year was a real blessing for me because it's allowed me to have more perspective and to be grateful for the things that I do have.
Okay, so I get the job of the awkward transition coming out of the deeply introspective moment. The let's look forward to the rest of this week, shall we? You've got a doubleheader tomorrow night against Western Illinois, and then you mentioned you head off to Auburn to take on the Auburn Tigers. What are you looking for this weekend? I know 4-0 would be ideal, but what do you kind of look at this weekend as that measure of is this team getting better?
Well, if you go down there and you compete with them, if you play ball games, good, sound, fundamentally clean ball games, and you play them close and compete, I think whether you win three or lose three, if you do that, I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of. I really don't. I mean, you're talking about one of the for sure top 10 teams in the country and arguably one of the top 5 teams in the country, and you're doing it at their place. So, tremendous challenge. I'm excited about it because I want to see how we stack up. Of course, last weekend we had Alabama and we did great against them and they were ranked 9th in the country. And so I feel confident that we'll go down there and give them some really good games. And I hope we come out on top, obviously. But to answer your question, if we just go down there and compete and look that team in the eye for 3 games, I'll know that we have a chance to do something in postseason.
Hey, Coach Aaron Erlewine. Coach, I really appreciate the time here today. Good luck tomorrow night against Western Illinois, and then also safe travels and good luck this coming weekend as you travel down to Auburn.
Okay, thanks a lot, George.
Hey, you are very welcome. Head Coach Aaron Erlewine, we'll be right back. We've got more of the Closers. We'll do that right after this.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Hey, welcome back to The Closers here alongside Jay Sparks. I'm George Young. Hope your Monday is going well. Your commute home is going well and safely. Sam Snelling, Rock M Nation, joining us right now. You can follow him on Twitter at Sam T. Snelling. How's your commute home going? Safely?
I just pulled up home, so I made it. And that's always the thing that you want, right?
Yes. Arrive home with the same number of items that you left home with. In some cases, it's kids. Some cases, it's just digits. And that's all you can hope for on a day like especially on a Monday. All right. interesting weekend, Sam, in that you had, for the first time I can remember in a long time, not involving football. You had banners out at fraternities and sororities. You had people welcoming this kind of like the three kings rolling into town with Porter Jr., Kevin Knox, and then like Harris, most recently of Washington, three asking out of letters of intent and getting it. Kind of to summarize the weekend, is this so unusual for Missouri in what way?
Well, I don't think that there's really been a whole lot of times in the past where there's been 2 top 10 players on campus at the same time. I think you could look back at the huge recruiting weekend they had a few years back in Kim's first fall when they had Antonio Blakeney and Isaiah Briscoe and Thomas Bryant. And certainly those three guys were big-time names, but only Briscoe was in the top 10. Blakeney was sort of in the teens. Thomas Bryant was down the list in like the 20s or 30s at that point. So, that was certainly a huge recruiting weekend, but none of those guys were committed at this point. And I think the major sort of qualifier for this weekend is the fact that Michael Porter Jr. arrived on campus for his official visit as a Mizzou commit, which allowed him to really play the influencer on the other two.
And And toward that, I mean, coaches, we went through this dead period, and folks understand the dead period, at least most of them do, that are following recruiting. You can do the text messaging and all that one. But from the standpoint of you have a coach's, an assistant coach's son helping you do the recruiting, two things on this. One, how unusual is that? And secondly, how important is that message kind of trickling down from the coaching staff through the athlete to the prospective recruit?
Well, I'd say it trickled down quite well if you consider the fact that Blake Harris committed. I mean, before the visit, he was telling everybody that he wanted to take his visits and sort of, you know, see everywhere that he wanted to see. And, you know, I think everybody thought that UConn and Michigan State were certainly players for his services. You know, but right away, I mean, he sort of felt the love and everything that Mizzou was able to provide and felt comfortable enough to commit. So I think that's a big thing. But if you look back at like the history of, you know, top level recruits, I mean, how many guys throughout, you know, the history of college basketball have been the number one overall recruit and also had their dad on a coaching staff? And I'd say that's a pretty limited list. You know, maybe going back to like Danny Manning, but I don't even know if Manning was the top overall recruit. He was certainly a highly rated guy.
Yeah, I know.
But with the, you know, I was just going to say, with the focus of recruiting has just gotten so hot because social media and the internet age that so many people are more aware of these sorts of circumstances. So I think this is pretty rare.
Sam Snelling, Rock Am Nation, SB Family of Nations with us here on The Closing. Follow him on Twitter at Sam T. Snelling. With that, we've seen a lot of coaching changes. Are we seeing a larger increase, though, of guys asking out of their letters of intent, going, you know what, I don't know as if this is actually going to be the situation for me anymore, and wanting to either reexamine or move on? Has that been an increase, or is it just a reporting of it been an increase?
Well, I think there's maybe been a slight uptick. I don't really recall a whole lot of players who have asked out while their coach hasn't been fired, and I've seen that a couple times this year, and that's sort of unusual. But for the most part, I'd say that anytime a coach is fired, most players are going to ask out, because especially for basketball, I know it might be a little different in football. You know, players want to commit to a school that they want to play for. But in basketball, with there being so few scholarships, I mean, players are really committing to a coach. So I don't really think as far as the number of players asking out of letter of intent as have gone up at all. I think there's been a few extra cases of guys who have sort of left the existing coach hanging. But, you know, guys like Porter and Tillman, you know, it's also fairly unlikely that you see this many high-level recruits that are going to schools where the coach is in trouble. You saw it at University of Washington and Illinois, and it was just sort of like this perfect storm that Missouri was able to take advantage of.
Sam, the here at Mizzou, as the recruits keep kind of coming through and the official visits and you know, as this madness kind of continues, that is this off-season storm for Mizzou, you know, the expectation games keeps getting ramped up, and you and I both just know we don't need to make a big Rock Am Nation sales pitch here. If you're not on Rock Am Nation, get on Rock Am Nation. But you know, you and I both just commented on the same comment, question, comment, speaking about the expectation game, and you know, it's great to see. I think when you get very educated people about what's going on at Mizzou commenting on things like that, and your comment is exactly right, I think. But share it with the radio audience here about the expectation game.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are ramping up right now and saying, oh, you know, well, if we get Porter and Knox and Tillman, that we'll be in the conversation for a national championship. And I've seen this comment. You know, this is not something that I think is unusual for a certain segment of Mizzou fan base right now. And I'm more pumping the brakes a little bit on that. My whole thing is I want to see what all the finalized rosters, and the reason that I gave, and you're kind of referencing my Rock M post, is last year everybody thought that Texas A&M was going to be really, really good. Well, come fall, they had two highly rated recruits who they were going to count on to do a bulk of the ball handling duties, who turned out to be partial qualifiers, and they couldn't play. So taking away two ball handlers, which is the exact problem that Texas A&M had, and suddenly they're a bottom of the barrel SEC team, despite having all this front court talent. I want to see, so if Mizzou's going to get somebody like Tillman, if they do end up landing Knox, yes, there's reason to be excited. And yes, I certainly think that the NCAA tournament becomes the expectation. But I certainly don't necessarily want to put these guys in a position where it's like we're expecting them to win a national title or go to a Final Four. Honestly, if you can make it to a Sweet 16 next year, I gotta think that's got to be an amazing season. Especially coming off the fact that you're dealing with a roster that won 8 games a year ago and has not been good for 3 years. We really need to sort of put into perspective the level of expectations that you're asking of not just Michael Porter Jr., but even a guy like Tillman, who's going to be a really good player but is still fairly raw. And I think he'll help if Missouri can land him, but I don't certainly think that he's a guy who's going to be a dominant big man or anything like that.
All right, so 6 losses next year.
probably a few more than that. And another thing is, like, people don't realize like how much better the SEC is going to be.
Yeah.
Alabama, Auburn are both going to be vastly better than they were this year. Kentucky's going to be Kentucky. Florida, Vandy, Arkansas, all these teams are good. I mean, Tennessee was really pretty solid, and they are bringing back everybody. It's going to be a really tough league, and I think people are really underselling the SEC right now.
Sam Snelling, Rock M Nation, with us here on the close. We've talked about Tillman a couple of different times. He asked out of his letter of intent, and it was granted earlier this morning by the University of Illinois. And now the people in Illinois, since he is leaving, are labeling him a drama queen. One media person, personality up in Chicago, leveled a cheating charge fired that shot across the bow. What's the story on Jeremiah Tillman? Drama queen because he's leaving the school he committed to, or drama queen because he can't make up his mind?
Well, that's the thing. Like, how are you going to call an 18-year-old kid who's trying to decide where he's going to, you know, play the next few years of his life in college a drama queen when, the guy that he committed to is fired? Like, look, I realize it was really tough for Illinois to land Tillman, and they had to work really hard, but they got him, and then they fired their coach. So I don't really know what you expect the kid to do. And all this thing, he tweeted his reaffirming his commitment. And like, no, he didn't. He retweeted a tweet. Like, let's stop reading too many things into kids on social media. I think, kind of referencing what we were talking about earlier about mm-hmm. the internet age and social media, like people like pick apart every little thing. I think even Gabe Bjarman had a tweet the other day and I saw him Power Mizzou later, like some guy's like, all right, let's dissect this Gabe tweet. I'm like, how about we not? Just take it easy. Tillman is, he's an 18-year-old kid. He's a really talented prospect. Was there some back channeling things going on to communicate to Tillman that if he wanted to ask out of his letter of intent that he would have a home at Missouri? Absolutely. But Missouri doesn't need to break rules to do it. They just send Michael Porter Jr. I mean, how convenient is that?
It seems to be pretty convenient. It's working out pretty well so far. All right, you broke the scholarships down on your post at Rock M, and it looks like in 3 years they've got a significant number of work to do. But right now, as it stands on paper, 2 scholarships remaining. One, do they fill both, and does there become a third if somebody else like Jacoby Kemp decides, you know what, I'm probably not going to see the floor except at practice, so I'm out?
I always hesitate to say who will and won't transfer, mm-hmm. but I would certainly not be surprised to see like one more player exit. I do think they're going to fill at least 2 spots. I think if there's a third spot that becomes available, I think you probably look at the grad transfer market to maybe fill that out. I don't really think there's a whole lot left in 2017. I know Mizzou fans are trying to say that they're going to be able to get in on Trey Duvall and Mo Bamba and stuff like that. I think maybe we need to cool the jets on that. I think if Mizzou is able to pull off, a class of Porter, Tillman and Knox, they got, along with Roberts and Harris, I think you got to be thrilled. I mean, who's going to squawk at the number two class in the country? But
Mizzou fans.
Yeah, like, oh, why couldn't we get Bamba? Like, yeah. I mean, like, it, those guys just don't really do that. Like, they just got kind of lucky with Knox. But yeah, so I think you're probably going to see them fill all three or two scholarships, three if another one becomes available, and we'll see a full sled of 13 scholarships this year.
Mark Smith, the point guard, had committed to Illinois, got out of his letter of intent. He and Tillman were kind of sewn together at the hip, but then you thought, well, the assistant coaching position at Illinois would keep Tillman there. That didn't happen. What happens with Mark Smith? Is Missouri in the running on that one, or has that ship sailed?
Well, Mark Smith did not ask out of it, just for clarity.
Okay, like, sorry.
He was a late-blooming prospect who Illinois was sort of thought to have inside on. Now, I think Illinois is still in the picture. I certainly think that some of the late additions of Ohio State, Kentucky, and Michigan State are certainly turning Mark Smith's head. I have heard that Michigan State is in really good position, but I still think it's going to end up coming down to Michigan State and Illinois. And I like Illinois' chances maybe a lot better than the rest of national media, because he does have a pre-existing relationship with Jamal Walker, who has been there, through the whole recruiting period for him. And then I think that his parents and a lot of his family and friends are really good big-time Illini fans. So I have a hard time seeing him completely turning his back on Illinois. I think it's going to come down to Michigan State and Illinois.
Okay, and one last thing. I know Konzo Martin has been out and about with all the media meet and greets in St. Louis and Kansas City and taking care of all of that. How do you, as the head coach, sell but not oversell to an alumni base that has basically pulled the ripcord on this program the last 3 years?
I think people are already going to be excited by the kind of recruiting class you're putting together. And I think that's going to be the biggest selling point is Konzo sort of saying to, people around the state, like, look, this is what we're going to bring in next year. We're going to be good. This is a reason to come out and watch. I mean, you're going to have the best player in the country, playing in Columbia next year. Come and see us play. And then immediately, if you see Michael Porter Jr. playing and you see a great environment, now you bring in the 2018 and 2019 recruits to sort of show that off. And that's when, right there, that's your sort of selling point. It's like, look, when we fill this building, Mizzou Arena is one of the best venues in the country. What we need is we need you guys to show up. And you're going to have a show to look at. You're going to have the Michael Porter Jr. show and hopefully, the Kevin Knox show. And I think those sort of things will be intriguing enough to anyone that maybe was on the fence. And soon enough, I think we're going to see a packed house at that arena again.
Well, that'll be fun. That's always a fun environment. Sam, thank you for the time, man. I do appreciate it. Good luck with the rest of the day. Have a great week, and we'll look forward to your next post there on Rock M.
I'll be around, guys. I always am.
Okay.
Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Thanks, Sam.
Always appreciate your time as well. Sam Snelling, Rock M Nation. When you follow him on Twitter at Sam T. Snelling, read the work at Rock M, especially the last post where he has a really good breakdown of the scholarships that exist. And as you go through this current class of sophomores to become juniors, what happens in the next couple of years? We got more of the closers coming up.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.